Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her website's JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show, Danielle.
Thank you, Jim.
Consumers, I guess with inflation running rampant, rents and mortgages sky high, they got to cut back somewhere. Where are they cutting back?
Everywhere. They're cutting back in every department, in services, in even in essentials like food spending. They're cutting back on used cars, on big ticket items. I mean, every major, whether it's Walmart, Home Depot, all the major, even the ones that are considered sort of value, the dollar stores, everywhere are noting major downdraft in the amounts of sales and the appetite for consumers to buy things. So that was just resonated this week again in the junk food stores. The KFCs and McDonald's, who, you know, normally one would think of them as a value type of option for dining out, but actually they're not that cheap anymore either. When you look at them, they're very expensive and their food is also very bad for your health. But basically speaking, they've all noticed this big drawdown in their sales. And the McDonald's CEO was saying, you know, it's worldwide. It's not just in North America. It's Australia, it's Germany, Japan, the UK. We're seeing it across the board. So that really lines up with, you know, our macro thesis and work that we've been doing the past few years, which is just this revelation that the credit effects that happened during the pandemic, you know, the big shutdown of the world and then the response from governments to pump a lot of money in directly into bank accounts of households and businesses, and then central banks at the same time to slash interest rates to rock bottom lows and leave them there for a couple of years, that really had the same effect worldwide, which was to goose consumption, which was their goal at that time, right? People were afraid of the collapse of the economy, so they goosed consumption with all these handouts. And the problem there is that it wasn't, of course, a sustainable amount. It wasn't like, an organic increase in income that people could then adjust up their spending. What they did was they did a lot of, you know, luxury spending and eating out and buying sports equipment and services. And then a bunch of other people levered up into, you know, buying secondary properties, whether they thought that was as an investment property or they thought that was as a recreational property. So people did all that with the handouts and the free money. And then we got into this, you know, again, the most rapid rate increase that we've seen in decades from March of 22 to July of 23. And, you know, I've been talking for some time about how there's a lag effect and it can take up to a couple of years before those, you know, tightening impacts really show up in the form of refinancing at higher interest rates and the drawdown that happens in terms of people's ability to spend. Well, we're now, as I say, seeing that. So earnings calls for corporations are all citing this trend and concern, and their outlook is weak as well. It's not like they see this as an aberration that's about to pass quickly. So consumers drive the majority of economic activity in most of the developed world. certainly in North America. And so, you know, then you look at things like their savings rates. The U.S. savings rate is just above 3% at the moment. So this is even lower than it was before the pandemic. So they've drawn down whatever savings was available in the past year, and they've also been using credit cards at the highest rates that we've seen in many years. So, and that's, of course, as you know, at very horrible interest rates above 20%. So it's just there's stress all over the place, and people got in the habit of spending too much, spending more than they should have, you know, speculating, buying into really inflated assets, whether it was cars or houses or what have you. And now that is all coming back to roost in the form of debt distress, defaults, and all that sort of stuff. So it's something that is, as I say, a global phenomenon. It's across all different sectors. It's all kinds of income brackets too, which is interesting, because a lot of people think, oh, this is just the, you know, lower income sectors that are having trouble. But no, in fact, it's across all the sectors. Again, the people with higher incomes tend to borrow the most because they can get approved for credit because they have the income to service it. So they're also being impacted greatly by the jump in interest rates. And then you had the central banks this week saying, you know, hey, we don't expect to be easing rates quite as quickly as people had hoped coming into the year. So that has a big impact as well.
So I'm actually kind of a rare horse here, where I'm reveling in the fact that the money I have in the bank, it actually makes money. And if you put it in the right bank, and you can really make a difference. Take a look at what your bank pays you in interest and what other banks pay, and punish your bank by removing your money and putting it into a high interest bank that's still protected by insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, for savers, the people that have, the few people that don't have debt and actually have net savings, this is a much better environment, because you can get yield, as you say, in, you know, high interest savings accounts, but also in things like the fixed income market, bonds. They're yielding, you know, the highest real yields since 2007 at least. So that is good for savers. It's just that it's awful for debtors. And the other thing is that when you look at the economy, because it's so highly levered, the amount of debt so outweighs, you know, relative to the amount of savings that people have, that it's a net negative. So when you look at the interest income paid, you know, the improvement in interest income paid into the economy because people are getting higher yields on their savings versus the increase in the amount of debt costs that the rest of the population is paying, it's a net negative. And that's why we're seeing this, contraction in consumer confidence. The latest readings for April came in the sourest that we've seen since 2022, July of 2022, so over 2 years ago, or coming up 2 years ago. And back then, don't forget, you know, we had much lower interest rates back in July of 2022. They had only started increasing rates at that point in March of that year, and they would do so for another year following that. So consumers have come off pretty quickly in terms of their sentiment here, and that's just a reflection of, again, all the stress that is evident in so many ways.
And a friend of the show, Tim Cyclesman Wood, did a study, and he said our inflation isn't caused by an oversupply of money so much as supply chain problems. It started with the pandemic, and he said the knock-on from that still, he said, why is that car part 27% more than it was before the pandemic? It didn't cost that much more to make, but it was much more difficult to obtain. We had computer chip shortages and so on. And so, yes, there was that surplus money where people were spending $230,000 for a computerized picture of a smoking chimp. And what's that worth now today? 50 cents?
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, the thing is, this is where you're seeing these, protests now against stores like Loblaws, right? Because not only are they monopolies that have benefited greatly from the pandemic and all the people having to buy groceries, you know, to a large extent, the more they've pulled back in the restaurant space, and there's a lot of companies going bankrupt in the restaurant space all over the place, but and a lot of them are negative earning it as even if they're still open. But as that's pulled back, of course, people still need to buy food. And here we have these conglomerates reporting, you know, the best profits and huge revenues and dividends and all this good stuff for their investors. And that's why you're starting to see a lot of backlash because, you know, individuals don't have that much choice. There's not a lot of competition, especially in places like Canada where you've got a handful of these huge grocery stores that, you know, just like we have a handful of huge banks that are the primary providers of finance in the economy. So they have these monopolies and they've benefited from all this, these trends. And now you're starting to see people push back and say, you know, what's it going to take to get prices to come back down? Because you guys are, you know, as you say, the costs have come down. But the prices that are being offered to the public to a large degree are still inflated. So it's interesting. It's disinflation is one thing where you see the rate of inflation coming down, and we've definitely seen that has dropped dramatically, but it doesn't mean prices are back to where they were before the pandemic. And that's the deflation part that needs to happen where you actually get markdowns. Now, you know, the good news there is that is typically what happens during a consumer-led recession, certainly a real estate-led consumer-led recession, because you have so much excess capacity and supply inventory at all levels, that ultimately the, you know, retailers and wholesalers end up slashing prices to clear excess inventory. And that tends to be a deflationary part of the cycle. So, for example, we're starting to see that in the used car space where, you know, the Manheim used car prices were off 13.7% year over year. So that's outright deflationary aspects. And that's, again, from excess supply of everything and a lot fewer people being able to qualify for auto loans, you know, that are 7, 9, 10%. And the same thing is going on with real estate to a large degree, Jim, because rents are actually coming off actual year-over-year decline in rents. For example, in Toronto, condo rents are off 7% year-over-year. So this is the kind of thing where, you know, Canadian retail sales volumes have been negative, home resales have been negative. As soon as you get a lot of people pulling back, you really do end up noticing it in declining prices. It just takes a significant period of time. But I think that it's going to play out over the next year because, as I say, the debt levels are already there, baked in. And even if we get some cuts in overnight rates from the central banks, like we came into this year with the bond market pricing in up to six to seven cuts from the U.S. Fed. And as of the press conference yesterday, you know, that's come down to maybe 25 or 30 basis points, maybe one or a little bit more cuts, but not until December. And then you had Tiff Macklem of the Bank of Canada giving testimony this week saying, you know, yes, we expect that we'll probably lower interest rates in terms of the base rate in the banking system, probably starting in the second half of the year. But FYI, he said, there's no chance rates are going to be back to as low as they were before, you know, during the pandemic. So all those people that are holding their breath thinking, you know, we just got to get through the next couple of months and they're going to start easing, as they start cutting the base rate by 25 basis points, or even if they do, you know, a couple or three, which is currently the base case in Canada, they expect the base rate to be lowered by 75 basis points at the end of the year. Well, that means you've still got mortgage rates in around the, you know, 4 to 5% range in Canada. And a lot of these mortgages that are coming up for renewal were taken out at less than 2%. So there's going to be no, you know, relief there in terms of refinancing, and that's really starting to settle in. And that plus the fact that, you know, again, in Canada, we've seen prices come off. Housing prices nationally are off about 15%, a bit more in places like Ontario where I am, about 17% from the peak of pricing in 2022. But if you look at the cost of housing, it's still about a 30% higher than it was pre-pandemic. So back to this whole point is that prices went up so much that even if interest rates come off a little bit, people can't afford to buy. And you've got this big standoff right now between an increasing surge of people trying to list because they're trying to ease their carrying costs, And now we've got this incentive where the feds have changed the capital gains tax as well. And they did that strategically to incentivize a bunch of transactions to happen, you know, this summer so that they could help offset their spending and keep their deficit within their target for the fiscal year 2024. So the feds are looking for cash. You know, everyone's looking for cash. So they're like, okay, let's change the tax rate. That'll incent a bunch of people to move on some of these properties. Well, there was already a trend coming out of the spring of a lot of people looking to sell cottage country, you know, secondary properties, condos that they bought on spec. All this stuff is the listings are up more than 58% since the start of the year in the Greater Toronto Area and around where I live. So 58% surge in listings at a time when the sales to listing ratio is falling, right? So there's still this big disconnect between the ability of buyers and the hoped for price of sellers. And at some point, as that distress level mounts, more and more of the sellers start to blink and or they lose the properties to the lenders. And then lenders just come in and start liquidating because they don't want to be in the, you know, property management business.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, can boycotts of major retailers like the Loblaws chain have any effect on prices? Because Loblaws says it's not going to work.
No, I don't think, I mean, they'll try and do something for PR purposes, I'm sure, but no, I think the greatest impact is, again, excess inventory, you know, so long as they have pricing pressure, i.e. they can get people to continue buying at the prices they're asking, you know, they're able to grow their earnings. But they are in the business of trying to grow their earnings quarter after quarter. And so just if people, you know, start spending the same amount, that's not going to boost their earnings. And then they start looking at incentives. If people start spending less, which is the trend that we're seeing now, the volume's actually falling, as I said, in retail sales, then that's when you get them cutting prices typically. They respond to market forces, not to protests typically.
Now, as a consumer now, you have loads of choices. Vancouver loaded with beautiful restaurants. I decided during the pandemic, I'm going to support three. I can't afford, I don't have a lot of available cash being over the age of 65, but I'm going to support three. And if the rest fall to the side, it's sad, but that's the way it is. And of those three, two of them have still gone under.
Yeah, it's quite unfortunate. I agree. There's been a lot of, you know, sort of the more specialty or alternative restaurants, like I'm a vegan, for example, and there's been a ton of plant-based restaurants that came out in the past few years, and then we're also noticing in Toronto that a lot of them are starting to go under. And I think it's because, again, there's a lot of conglomerates and the big chains that can, you know, roll out at throwing additional things on their menu to try and attract from a broad swath, and they also have the highest you know, pricing pressure in terms of getting the cost of goods down. So their margins are, you know, something they can typically protect more than some of the smaller restaurants. But basically, Jim, the problem is during the credit boom, again, while they were creating all this credit in the economy, there was money flowing to all kinds of things. It was really indiscriminate. Whereas now that people have a lot less money, and increasingly so as debts come up for refinancing, as I said, they are having to just cut and not spend on some of these discretionary items. So you're seeing, you know, the percentage of 43% of U.S. small businesses in the March, latest April data were behind on their rent. And business insolvencies up 36% year over year versus new business creation is negative in the last year. So there's a lot of you know, costs going on in terms of the mean reversion here, because as I said, a lot of things that were happening in the last couple of years were just not sustainable. They were purchased by handouts, not by sustainable income gains.
Danielle, is there, I know we've gone through this before, but it seems like we have a looming recession for a lot of people. The recession's already here. How can you recession-proof yourself, or can you?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, it always goes back to the same basic principles. Financial discipline doesn't come from gambling and, you know, trying to win your way out of bad habits. It comes from being disciplined and careful with the things that you spend on and trying to keep your income stream diversified or protected. So no matter what level of money you're earning, or if you're living on your savings, to try and keep it so that you're not spending too much of that, that you have some buffer, right? So that's important. That's been difficult as prices leapt during the pandemic, but some of that is starting to come off now. You know, go through your statements and look at what's coming off your Visa and bank account monthly. If you've got a lot of these auto pay things or monthly fees that sometimes you kind of get not even aware of what's happening there, and you look at it and go, oh, I'm paying, you know, this much. So I think it behooves everyone to do that kind of process, take an inventory and look carefully at what you're spending and see if there's any room to cut things that aren't required. The other issue, of course, is, again, many people overextended themselves into real estate, whether they bought during the pandemic or whether they refinanced. Both things had the net effect of, you know, taking out debt as against a peak pricing, which is no more. And so as the asset side starts to fall, you know, the net equity that you thought you have begins to evaporate. And that's where I think you should look really carefully at, if you have these additional properties, are they providing income to cover their costs? Because if they're not, they're net drag on your actual cash flow. So I, you know, pretty much every week I get contacted by someone who's got these additional properties, whether they were just purely for their own use or whether they were these Airbnb style ideas they had. And they're just not carrying themselves. And some of them are at existing low mortgage rates that will be renewed in the next year or two or three. So if it's barely breaking even at, you know, a low mortgage rate, and you're looking at that stepping up, you know, it requires some actual hard decisions sometimes to say it doesn't make sense to continue to carry this and lose money every month, or it was a bad decision, and kind of admitting that sometimes and taking steps to cut your losses can be a very important thing to do. The same thing with businesses. If you have a business and it's losing money every month, you need to really be upfront and sober about your decision making around what you're going to do about that. You know, adding, extending and pretending and hoping it all works out can sometimes be a fatal approach. So you have to be very clear-eyed about your assessments of your cash flow, whether it's personal or business. The other thing is making sure that your savings is not all in the casino, you know, and this is the reason why recessions tend to be so hard on people. We get into, you know, the Fed, the central banks, once they start cutting, it is typically when the carnage begins to accelerate to the downside. It's a reflection of the fact that the economy is contracting typically, which means that job losses continue to increase. Businesses start to lose more and more revenue typically during the cutting part of the cycle, which is what a lot of people misunderstand and think once central banks start cutting, everything's going to be great. No, there's a lag, just like there was on the tightening cycle. On the cutting cycle, it takes a year or two before that actually starts to filter through and really provide relief in the real economy. So you have to make sure that you don't have all your savings in things like equities. And I look at statements repeatedly. Again, people became complacent in the way that the stock market rallied out of the 2020 crash because of all the free handouts. Stocks spiked back really quickly, and people have that expectation that, oh, well, if we get into a downturn or there's a bear market, it'll jump back within a matter of months. In fact, that's typically not the case. So you have to make sure that you don't have all your life savings in this very cyclical stuff, which typically falls in any cycle where equities went into a Fed cutting cycle at anything close to the valuations like they are today, which are very extreme. We've seen valuations this extreme last in late 2021 when markets plunged all through 2022. So now we've made back some of those losses. You know, things like the TSX is just back to where it was 2 years ago. It hasn't made money, just big debt bounce back. And now, as I say, typically you get a drawdown of about 40% in broad equity markets like the S&P and the TSX when you get into a central bank cutting cycle in response to a contracting economy. So you have to try and be proactive and careful that you don't have savings you may need to draw on for liquidity or to support your life or your income or pay your bills, all in these highly volatile assets that'll be crashing along with the economy. So being proactive and clear-eyed and not just thinking you can just buy and hold risk and it'll all work out is very important.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Counsel Incorporated. Her website's jugglingdynamite.com and venablepark.com. If you have any questions for Danielle or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. You can find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.